Hello and welcome to the Green Front. This is an exciting edition for me to be hosting because I am coming to you from the PRN studios in New York City. Been here for a couple of days of business and fun and some theater and a little bit of eating and even a little bit of shopping. Always fun to be here, but I'm still hearing all these stories about people, especially in the Staten Island area and out on Long Island, that are still recovering from Superstorm Sandy from October 29th of last year. So not surprised to hear that, but you know, really reminds those of us who are not living in the New York area or along the eastern coast that was so hard hit almost 6 months ago, that the recovery process is slow and long and the money is still not coming in that needs to reach the people who need it most. Other than that, I want to give a shout out to a new coffee shop. Any of you who live in the Manhattan area, there's a new place open at Lex and 50th, DeMarco's. They have fabulous coffee and snacks, and they were giving it all away for free. So I got caffeinated today, courtesy of DeMarco's. Check them out next time you're in Midtown. And very pleased to welcome to the show today a longtime friend of mine, Peter Sinclair of Climate Crocs. We're going to be talking about how conversation is heating up on the carbon tax. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Great to, quote, see you again. I saw you in San Francisco last August, about six months ago, for the Al Gore refresher course for those of us who had already been through the program years ago on giving his slideshow. And they had hundreds of new volunteers. And at that time, we talked about, oh, how things seem to be really heating up, if you will, that more talk about climate. And that was even, that was just after the extreme heat and drought of the summer of 2012. That was, of course, before we saw Superstorm Sandy and the effects, of course, still being felt in terms of the drought and just the strange weather that we've been seeing, including a lot of snow sometimes. We get a little bit more of everything. And that's not surprising to someone like yourself who's been following this. But what's also not surprising, I guess, is the opposition to any real action on climate change, specifically opposition to a carbon tax, heating up as we finally start hearing more serious talk and consideration where it matters most, and that is in the legislature on this very real win-win-win possibility. So I wanted to check in with you because I know you cover this really closely, and I just am seeing more news on both sides. I think there was a press conference today by the fossil fuel industry or their flax saying that this can't possibly work. I don't know if you're able to catch the specifics of that or not.
Well, there are two things going on today. One, we're seeing a rollout of a proposed carbon tax with Representative Waxman, Senator Whitehouse, and a few others signing on to that, where they're actually seeking input from the public in terms of how much of a carbon tax people think there should be, whether it should rise at a certain rate every year and what that rate might be, and other questions like if we tax carbon, what do we do with the revenue? Do we try to make up for the deficit in the budget? Do we try to make up for cuts in entitlement programs? Or do we just make it revenue neutral and pass everything right through back to the consumer? So there are a number of different flavors of the carbon tax. But what's remarkable is that the climate denial community apparently feels threatened enough by it that they had some kind of a big press event themselves today to push back on the whole thing. And, you know, which is we've seen a lot of in the past, but it points out that we're seeing a growing acceptance of the idea, even among Republican and conservative economists, that some kind of carbon tax is not only feasible but desirable.
Mm. And you know, are they working? Is somebody working with the Citizens Climate Lobby, which you're a part of, and I am too, for that matter? They've really been on the forefront, in the forefront of lobbying, you know, legislators on both sides of the aisle, and really thinking out quite deeply the specifics of how a carbon tax would work. The fee and dividend approach is what we're talking about.
Well, the Citizens Climate Lobby is a really great group, and I believe that their primary focus is on a carbon tax that would pass directly through back to the taxpayers and the consumers.
And that seems to be the most popular version, and it does seem to be a win-win-win, but of course, up against the fossil fuel industry, nothing is going to be easy. Do you think it's doable? Do you think we will see a carbon tax passed during Obama's second administration?
Wow.
Put you on the spot.
The White House has said that they are not going to propose one. And so I don't quite know how to read that in light of Obama's more recent pronouncements that he's serious about climate change. It may be that he's leaving that up to the legislative bodies to hash that out. The biggest obstacle is the Republican-controlled Congress, which is basically dominated by a kind of a Tea Party mentality. And that's not to say that a growing number of people in the Republican Party are clearly getting uneasy with how far out on a limb they've gone in terms of climate denial. And the science just gets stronger and stronger, and we've had some very significant developments just in the last couple of weeks that we can talk about if you like. But I've had some interactions with at least one very senior Republican member of Congress, which lead me to believe that they're trying to figure out a way to back off of where they're at, but they've gone so far out on a limb that it's very difficult at this point.
Yeah, it's unsustainable. I mean, as time goes forward, it's becoming, you know, more and more painfully clear that climate change is real and it's arrived and it's impacting our U.S. weather. So they're going to look dumber and dumber. So is that sort of the thinking? We better, you know, come back from the edge of our right-wing extremism and not believing 98% plus of climate scientists saying that this is, you know, a huge problem.
Well, we've had three plus years now of just one extreme weather event after another, many of which are clearly related to climate change. And what the science is starting to tell us is that a lot of these events may be related to the loss of Arctic ice that we've seen, especially since 2007. There's been a real crash in the Arctic ice coverage, and that affects the way the jet stream flows, and the jet stream controls our weather. And so we've been seeing some events like, remember a year ago, the June and March spring that we had that was so catastrophic here in the upper Midwest for our fruit crops. And just was generally stunning to everybody that experienced it. And, of course, the ongoing drought that was so intense last summer but is still happening throughout many parts of the Midwest. It may be that we will continue to see these kind of extreme events as just part of a new normal. And so the question, it's an open question of just how many times the Republican Party has to get hit with a pine board by one of these terrible events before they start to wake up and get it.
And as the Republican Party does some navel-gazing, wondering what happened back in November, do you think that climate change comes up as one of the issues they really need to look at again, or is that, as it usually is, way down on the list of priorities and issues?
Well, I think that you see that a lot where climate change is down on the list. But a little bit of that is kind of dependent on how the question is asked, because if you kind of delve into the polling a little bit, as I have, and talk to some of the pollsters, it's clear that a majority of Americans understand that climate is an issue. A majority of Americans, even Republicans, get it, that human beings have something to do with it. And a majority of Americans feel that the government has a role in mitigating or solving this problem.
And can you believe, as I can't, in 2013, that we still don't have any mainstream program on covering environmental issues as well as beginning with climate change? I've been in New York a couple days trying to get hold of someone at CNN or the New York Times, which, of course, just eliminated its environmental desk and green blog to see if anyone might be interested in a, you know, green radio show or even television. It blows my mind, 15 years into this, that, you know, we have to be relegated to the World Wide Web, which is a wonderful place to be, and God bless Progressive Radio Network. But, you know, a lot of Americans, you know, unless they happen to be, you know, clicking on the remote and switch by and hear a conversation that seems kind of compelling and interesting and perhaps relevant to their lives, you know, won't seek out this kind of programming.
It's pretty amazing when you flip through the cable channels at night and see some of the niche programming that's on there.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And you really got to ask yourself, you know, is there really no room for something real?
You know, we were in the hotel, my husband and I, last night, and so something was on that we don't usually watch, and there was an ad for Storage Wars. There's a reality show about storage facilities, but nothing on the future of the planet, which is melting as we speak. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't so darn frustrating and serious.
Yeah. You know, down that road lies a whole lot of frustration. So just let's not go there.
All right. I just had to get it in because I know you've been at this as long as I have, maybe longer. And we pull our hair out sometimes when we see each other. So I thought we would do it on the radio for a minute here.
Yeah, you and I have both taken our lumps along this road.
And then, okay, we can't go on from the subject before we just note that Al Gore, you know, sold Current TV to Al Jazeera and complimented them on their great climate coverage. Did you notice that, you know, he missed a chance to have a show on climate change and other environmental issues because we were personally lobbying him for a couple of years, you know, once they went to the progressive talk format. So it was like, yeah, Al, but, you know, you owned a network. You know, what about that?
Yeah. What can I say?
Yeah.
You know,
as the glaciers melt.
Eternal puzzles.
Yep. And it will remain a mystery. So, we just have a couple more minutes. And unfortunately, at the PRN studios, I've lost my connection to the internet here, having some problems with the phone line. So I had a couple of stories I was going to ask you about, but just tell me what's on your mind in the meantime.
Well, two things. One is in the last 2 weeks, we've seen this very, very significant research come out that pushes back the temperature record from 1,000 or 2,000 years back to about 11,000 years back, to just as the last ice age was kind of coming to a close. And it really kind of slams the door on a lot of denial and obfuscation that we've seen about the global temperature record. So, and then that did get a whole lot of press. So that's a very significant development.
I agree. And the Keystone Pipeline controversy is getting not enough, but more press. And we're going to be talking with Ben Wessel of 350 Action. That's from 350.org in just a moment. So we won't focus on that too much. But that is something that is, being talked about a whole lot more than a year ago when most non-green friends of mine, you know, had no idea what I was talking about when I mentioned tar sands protest. And one famously said, "What tar sand protest, Betsy?"
Exactly. Yeah. Can I jump in with just a plug for a project that I'm working on?
Please do, Peter.
I'm working with one of the world's preeminent Greenland ice sheet scientists, Jason Box. And Jason has been tracking the deposition of soot from wildfires on the Greenland ice sheet and asking the question, are more wildfires caused by climate change causing more soot in the atmosphere, causing more darkening of the ice sheet, and then increasing the melt? And we're doing something unique in that we're doing a crowdsource project to try to raise funds and go up there this summer and actually sample the snow, take some measurements, and find out if that process is really happening. And if anybody wants to help out with that, there's a website, darksnowproject.org, where you can go and find out about it. And if you if you have the resources to kick in and help us crowdsource that, you can help us get up to Greenland. That's darksnowproject.org.
Okay, Peter, and give us the website for Climate Crocs while you're at it.
Yeah, climatecrocs.com is my blog. As you know, I do a regular series, Climate Denial Croc of the Week, of YouTube videos. And also there's a new series with the Yale Forum on Climate Change in the Media called This Is Not Cool.
Peter, you and Climate Crocs rock. Thank you for all the great work you do. Great talking to you, as always. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll be talking with a youth activist and organizer for 350.org and talk about what's next in terms of the Keystone Pipeline protests.